This is about the 1%, and there's a lot of different ways you could define them or label them or whatever, and I'm not going to get into that. I'm talking about extremely wealthy people. If anybody here is extremely wealthy, please raise your hand so we can ask for grants from you, right? That's what we do. Yeah. I've never actually met one, but someday I would like to. Let's see. How do I get this going here? I have no relationships to disclose. Now, I want to say that this, at first when you say, well, how could there be a culture of poverty among extremely wealthy people? It sounds kind of like a, you know, I don't know, an oxymoron or some kind of weird, you know, Latin phrase to describe something that doesn't make sense, right? But what I want to do is take something that has been applied to poor people and a type of analysis that has been applied to poor folks and apply it to other folks. Because I think it will tell us something about the theory of a culture of poverty itself, and also tell us something about how poor people in the United States and elsewhere sort of structure their lives and what causes poverty. I think this will help us understand. And also, I think there are some very important health and social policies that if there really is a culture of poverty among wealthy people, then it really says something about what we might need to do to make this world a better place, what kind of interventions we might want to proceed with. So first of all, I want to ask a question. How many of you have heard the term culture of poverty? Not a lot. And I'll define it more in a minute. Basically, it's a way of explaining why people are poor and how poverty gets perpetuated across time, across generations. And it sort of says that people are poor because they have a set of assumptions and a set of behaviors that make them poor. And that somehow these assumptions and behaviors are maladaptive. That it leads to them not being able to have productive lives or acquire wealth. And interestingly is that it actually replaced an older idea that was sort of very white male, Eurocentric. The idea that poor people were poor because they were somehow less human. So back in the 19th century, white Europeans and Americans were wealthy because God chose them and made them better people, more human. And everybody, the rest of the world was not wealthy and not as cultured because God had made them less human. So back in the 20th century, and I think this is probably up before all of our time here, in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, and 50s, people began to sort of look at those assumptions that those were wrong, that poor people are not less human. The problem is that poor people have these behaviors. They act differently than non-poor people, and that's the issue. And there was a guy named Oscar Lewis who wrote ethnographic books based on ethnographic studies in Mexico and elsewhere, and other folks, who sort of said, you know, people who are poor are just as, you know, caring and loving and everything else as non-poor. They're just as human. They have just as strong mixture of interrelationships and everything else as the non-poor. It's just that they have these wrong behaviors. And initially, this idea of a culture of poverty was actually used to justify interventions and assistance to poor people. It was one of the intellectual underpinnings of President Johnson's war on poverty. It was seen as a way that if we can just get money and targeted programs to the poor, we will make them non-poor. Now, unfortunately, almost as soon as sort of liberals and progressives in the 50s and 60s adopted this idea, it was used and adopted by neoliberals to attack social programming. Because in their view, if poor people were poor because of bad behaviors and bad assumptions, then all the government money and all the government programs and all the foundation money in the world is not going to help them because they have these bad behaviors and bad attitudes. So it eventually became very popular among neoliberals later in the 20th century as a way of attacking social programs. And it even became a way of blaming the victims. These people are poor because they act badly. It's not our fault. It's not society's fault. It's not social inequality. It's not because of structural racism. It's not because of all the other things that you might think have a explanation for why some people are poor and others are not. The problem is these people don't behave right. And a huge amount of social programming from Ronald Reagan's time onward have been based upon this. How many of you heard of the HOPE 6 program? The HOPE 6 program was the idea that public housing is bad because it concentrates poor people. So let's demolish public housing. Let's don't have housing for poor people. We're the only advanced country in the world that does that because we believe in the United States, collectively, that that concentrates poor and allows these cultures of poverty to persist. So this has been a very powerful idea. That's just one example. The other big example was under President Clinton, when they got rid of, they put time limits on welfare and other social programming because it was thought that by having support for poor people for too long of a time period, you sort of reinforce this culture of poverty. So it's a very, very strong, very, very long-term, ongoing kind of way that supports, underpins social policy in the United States. So a little bit more in detail, the term culture of poverty means that not all poor people, but a certain percentage of them, and an important percentage of them, you might think of the undeserving poor as opposed to the deserving poor, whatever. That's a whole other paper in and of itself. So, but that this undeserving poor group of people do things wrong. They don't have the kind of mindset. They don't have the characteristics of successful people, as it were. And that one thing that government needs to do is to make these people change so that, therefore, we will eliminate poverty not by eliminating, again, all the other things that might cause poverty, the tremendous income inequality and other kinds of things that drive poverty in this country, but by changing the behavior of these poor people, we will make them not poor. The other problem is thought that poor people spend too much time with other poor people, and therefore that perpetuates a culture of poverty. The more poor folks you have together, the more isolated they are. That tends to create this kind of groupthink of bad behaviors. And ultimately, it prevents them from being not poor. So that's, I apologize for any sociologists here or anybody who's a more familiar with the history of welfare, of public assistance in this country. That's a very short, standing on one foot definition of all this. But I want you to twist that around. Now, we've had this 50 years of studying poor people, poking them with fingers and taking money away from them and destroying their homes and making them move and cutting off benefits from them, all based upon this idea that they have these characteristic behaviors and beliefs. Now, let's take that analysis and let's apply it to these extremely wealthy people in this country. And let's see whether or not they have those same beliefs and whether or not that's also causing them to prevent obviously they're wealthy, so it's not preventing economic advancement. But as we saw in last year's election, they're extremely unhappy people, right? So something is causing that unhappiness. So maybe by looking at this, we can at least make the Mitt Romneys of the world a little bit happier. How's that? So what I'm going to do here in the next three slides or so, I realize I only have a couple of minutes here, is just sort of look at some of the things that are said to be characteristics of a culture of poverty, sort of say in a very gross way how it's applied to poor people, and then let's say, well, does it apply to the extreme wealthy people, the 1% as well? It's just sort of a little way of doing a different kind of social analysis here. So one big thing that Oscar Lewis and others have said is that poor people don't take personal responsibility, right? Poor people have this nasty habit of blaming society for their inability to afford basic necessities. That, it's not my fault that I can't afford food for my children. It's society's fault. Well, that's wrong, right? Because we all know it's each mother's and father's, usually just the mother's, not the father's, but that's, again, another paper here, but that it's certain people, it's the parents' responsibility. If they can't afford food, it's, food insecurity is not a social problem, it's an individual problem, and when poor people don't take responsibility, that perpetuates food insecurity. Okay, that's one way, so the inability to take personal responsibility has been applied. Well, let's think about how wealthy people react, right? We all know that the 2007 financial meltdown was caused by, you know, these strange kind of financial speculatory instruments, right, that no one could understand, tranches of bundled securities, bad mortgages to people that they knew could never pay them off. So who's responsible for this? Was it the people who made the huge amounts of money in all this? No. It's these people who took these mortgages that they couldn't afford to pay back, right, that half of them didn't know what they were signing. If any of you ever bought a house, right, you get a stack of papers like this, and, you know, if you actually were to stop and read them, the whole process would break down. You can't sign things. But yet the wealthy blamed these poor people signing these mortgages rather than, you know, all the various, you know, Merrill Lynch and all these other people who were then doing it and making money off of these things, right? Remember, again, in the presidential election, right, why did Romney lose? Because the 47%, right? Rather than taking his own personal responsibility, that maybe he had a negative personality, he had bad consultants, he was making bad decisions, he blamed the 47%. He had an inability to take personal responsibility for his problems. So there's one, right? Click. Another thing is that people, poor people, are dinged because they have short time horizons, right? Rather than saving money for the future, they'll spend it on today's necessities. I was reading an analysis of a neighborhood in Boston where they asked poor people, if you suddenly got $1,000, what would you spend the money on? And because most of them said they would spend it on food or maybe buying a car, so they could get a job, or paying back rent, it said that these people lack a long time horizon. They don't spend their money wisely. They're not saving, forgetting the fact that these people were very poor. Their median income was below $10,000 a year. That not being addicted might be a short term strategy, but it might be a very effective way of living, right? But poor people are bad because they have short time horizons. Well, look what all the wealthy folks have been doing, the day trading, you know, or the infinitesimal changes in the stock market that have been responsible for crashes like in the NASDAQ a couple weeks ago, everything like that. You might think that what's wrong with these folks that they support candidates who will not fund services because that's a long-term investment in people, but they don't want to do that, right? They're worried about their short-term advantage by cutting taxes. So they've been sacrificing long-term political stability in this country for their own short-term political gain. So again, we seem to have a problem with these short-term time horizons with wealthy folks. Another problem is that poor people don't like to work, right? They lack a work ethic. They just don't want to take jobs, right? I'm not saying I support these things. I'm just saying how cultural poverty is said to affect poor people's behavior and then affects the country's social policies. Well, look what wealthy people do. We have earned versus unearned income. And earned income is taxed at a higher rate than unearned income. So it was kind of this nasty disincentive for working, right? So among the wealthy, we have this aversion to work. And also, you know, you might remember, for those who are a little bit older, in the 90s, Leona Helmsley said, you know, taxes are for the little people. And sometimes you'll find, you know, those wealthy folks get together, and they'll say, well, you know, what is wrong with these poor people? They work two, three jobs. You know, why are they working so hard? You know, why don't they be like us? So it seems like the wealthy are adverse to work. And then there's distrust of institutions. And poor people are denigrated because they distrust the police, they might distrust their social workers, all these other institutions. Well, at the same time, we have very wealthy folks who say, government's the problem, let's let private industry do it. We now have a whole movement to say that colleges and universities are bad, higher educations, don't go to college, become an entrepreneur, and, you know, they boast of the disruptive technologies, even though they seem to be, you know, easier to harm low-income people than it does to actually harm the wealthy. So again, we have another trait traditionally associated with a culture of poverty that seems to be among the wealthiest folks. Now, we don't know. No one's ever taken a sample. We don't know to what extent this is actually these traits are really in that 1% or in the extremely wealthy folks. But then again, we really don't know that among poor people either. There have been small surveys, but no one ever does sort of a, with a control group would say, well, you know, X percentage of poor people have this attitude, but in the general population, it's only X minus whatever. We don't know that. We don't study poor people that way for the most part. So I'm just going to conclude with some policy implications. Because we decided that a culture of poverty is bad among poor people, well, if it's bad among poor and it's really bad among the wealthy, this is some of the things we should do. We should break up concentrations of wealth. We have gated communities. We have, you know, luxury apartment buildings in New York that, you know, where $50 or $60 million will get you a condo. That seems to reinforce these negative behaviors. So it seems like from a public policy point of view, maybe we need to, you know, urban renewal or some kind of government funding to sort of say, you can't all live here together. You have to live over here. Forget if you grew up in Westport, Connecticut. You got to move, right? And you got to go over here, even though your grandparents live there, because there's a bad things that happen when you have concentrations of wealth. We need to remove incentives not to work. So, because, you know, we make poor people work all the time, right? But wealthy folks, you know, we have all this thing, like with the earned versus unearned income, right, where we sort of incentivize not working. And these people now hate work. So we got, you know, that's a problem. And I think, finally, we need to educate them. We need to let them explain that their problems are caused by themselves and by their bad behaviors and by their bad attitudes as a way of improving the lives for themselves and for the country as a whole. So, thanks for listening.